We are back. That's the sound of the Ferrari V10. We're going to Monza this weekend, but it's the grandstand. I'm F. Knowles, a.k.a. Ryan Knowles, just so you guys know, my name is not F. I'm here with my boy, P. Money, a.k.a. Pushan. What's good, my dude?
Hey, it's good to, yeah, it's good to remind people. You can do a little intro every now and again for those new listeners that we're getting.
Yeah. My mom doesn't hate me, I swear. Oh, man, we've got a race to talk about. And as much as I think we get nervous about going to Zandvoort because there's so much goddamn orange, or as Lando would like to say, papaya in the stands. this track this race had all the drama in it, and I don't know. I think we just get straight into it.
A question for all of you except Romain Grosjean.
To whom it may concern, fuck you.
More ladies in the paddock? Yeah, more paddock access to some women. There's too many dudes.
I don't really have a lot to comment on that, except that he was being a pussy.
Yeah, Zandvoort. Is that how you say it in Dutch? I have no idea.
I don't know. I could help you with the Italian, but I'm not going to be able to help you with the Dutch pronunciation, I'm afraid.
Bro, this track, with its bank turns, I remember when it first came on the calendar, there was a lot of skepticism about whether it really should, given the size of the cars, whether this track should have F1 cars on it in this capacity. But holy shit. Everything this whole weekend, from FP1 to FP2, you know, obviously the Danny Ric incident, which we will get into.
Oof. Yeah. Started off with a bang.
Yeah. FP2 and what a strange incident, but I don't want to get into it yet. But as far as a race is concerned, I mean, I think my favorite graphic of the weekend was it was lap 3, and let me just read this. So lap 3, Russell's in P1, Lando's in P2, Alex is in P3, Piastri's in P4. It goes soft, 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 enter, soft, 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 medium, soft, enter, enter, pit exit, pit exit, enter, pit exit, enter, in pit, enter, enter. Like, what? If you had no idea, like if somebody was like, what? Obviously there's rain, but holy shit.
Yeah, it kind of looked like if you just tuned in, like if a baby was just kind of banging on the keyboard, sending out wrong information. Yes,
someone in race control is just like, we're just going to start pressing buttons.
Or a cat that fell on the race control keyboard.
Someone's working
from out of here. Yeah.
Someone's still working from home.
Yeah, it was nuts, man. I don't think I've ever seen rain arrive in that intensity after the formation lap even started, which was crazy. I thought people might come in after they finished the formation lap and not even take the start to put on inters. It was wild. And obviously, it wasn't easy to predict because a lot of teams went different directions and a lot of them fucked up and some of them didn't. Yeah.
Some teams got it right. Some teams got it wrong. But that lap two to three stint, I mean, that two lap stint, what was it like lap two? And you just see the rain on the front stretch and, or the front straight. And
you see that camera angle, it was just, you know, full of raindrops. I didn't even clean that off just to show you how much it was raining. And I think, yeah, drivers came in from lap two onwards. So right after finishing lap one, a lot of drivers stayed out and a lot came in, and those who came in straight away made the right call, and others we'll get into it.
That was another thing too, is just you rarely hear about like a four stop race.
was that the winning strategy?
I think it really was. Because obviously later in the race, it got red flagged. It was so bad. The rain was so bad. But
yeah, because it rained. We went to intermediate tires. It dried up. We went back to tri tires. It rained again. Intermediate. Some people put the wet tire on, which is absolutely ridiculous. You never put that tire on. Red flag. Finished with a rolling start. Intermediates again. I mean, talk about chaotic. But somehow Max Verstappen still won. If there was a race he could have lost, it was this one, but he didn't.
It's nuts. It's really crazy to think, given all the variables, somehow he still brought it home. And I think we saw a little bit of that come out on the podium. You know, they had that live rendition of the Dutch national anthem, which, by the way, at this point, can we just like skip the national anthems when like we just need to stop doing it, because we're hearing like we know what it sounds like at this point. Okay.
Right.
We get it.
I mean, you mean to skip the Dutch national anthem? We heard it twice this weekend.
Yeah.
Pre-race. Yeah. And also, was it the first time that we heard it sung and not just the instrument? I thought usually it's
the like live rendition was better. It's nice to have lyrics with it rather than just the like very monotonous, you know, it's rather boring national anthem.
Agree with you on the, it's not the most exciting one, but I do prefer the instrumental versions of other anthems. And then just to hear the crowd sing, aka the Italian national anthem with people singing in the back, that would be amazing. But I think there needs to be some work done before Ferrari could do that. But that's, you know, we're moving away from the conversation here. Max, very emotional because he achieved a lot this weekend. He achieved a lot. And I just have a few stats to kind of put in perspective. First of all, he entered the top 10 list of pole positions with his 20th pole. Guess who's next on that list for him? Think about iconic 50s driver.
Fangio.
Yeah, that's right. So if he gets a pole position in Monza, he will equal Fangio. He obviously equaled Sebastian Vettel's 9 consecutive race wins. It was his 90th podium in Formula One. 46th win already. He could finish the year in third position all time. Yeah, he's currently 5th. Behind
46 Lewis. Wins, and he's 24 years old. That is,
he's 25.
He's 25. Sorry, 25.
So he's only behind Lewis, Schumi, Vettel, Prost. He's going places. He also, this kid's pretty good.
this kid Verstappen, he's going places.
He also converted his 12th consecutive pole position into a win, which is a record that he shares with Michael Schumacher. Wow. What could I say? Perez made the right call going into the pits at the end of lap one. And yep. I thought, oh my God, Checo could win this. And then Max just did his thing in the most Max Verstappen way.
For me, what's most shocking is how the tone of this podcast has changed over the years, where I'm now like, I'm genuinely at a point where I really don't like the Max of old, where, you know, a lot of complaining, just kind of douchebaggery on track, the double standards, which I think still happen with him, but it's you kind of have to be a fool at this point to deny how good he's been and how good he is. It's kind of like if you were to watch the Bulls in the early 90s and just completely disrespect them at that point when they had their first three-peat, you kind of got to just be like, wow, we're witnessing history, even if you don't like them.
You can think all you want about a driver, but when they're achieving things that have never been done before, even by Michael Schumacher, even by Lewis Hamilton, Sebastian Vettel, you have to just take a minute, recognize what's being done, and appreciate. Because in 20 years, when Max Verstappen is no longer in F1, you will look back on this period and say, wow, that was wild.
He might still be in F1 in 20 years, dude.
I mean, Alonso might still be.
Yeah. I mean, think about it. Yeah. And I think we've said our piece on Max. Clearly got emotional on the podium when they did the live rendition of the Dutch national anthem, which is rare to see from him. We had Fernando back on the podium for the first time since his big prediction.
Canada.
Oh, Canada.
That's right. Aston Martin is back. Like I told you last weekend or last episode. Yep, I'm claiming it. I think they're back in the fight for P2.
Do you think so? Fernando said in his post-race interview that he felt truly connected to the car. Do you feel like Fernando has like a docking station for himself, where like Avatar style, where he like he connects with the car, if you know what I mean? There's like
I think that Fernando's, you know how kids growing up, little boys will have like a race car bed frame. I think Fernando's is his Formula One cockpit at age 42. He probably sleeps in a suspended F1 simulator. So when he wakes up, he doesn't lose any time getting on that
sim. Yeah, he wakes up and goes straight to the sim.
Oh, man. We spoke about development and how each team is getting they're going up and down the order, especially between Mercedes and Aston this year, because they're bringing updates at different rates.
Yep.
I think now we're at a stage where Aston Martin is maybe a little bit of ahead, but also it's also maybe track dependent. And I'm not saying that, oh, forget about McLaren and forget about Merck, but I'm just saying we had a run of races where Aston Martin went the wrong direction, and now clearly they're back. And honestly, they almost snatched up the win there when we had that restart in the end. Alonso went for it. He tried to get side by side with Max, and I would have loved to see just them going into that T1 side by side to see what Max would have done.
I think he could have done it. I genuinely think Fernando, if there's one driver who could have done it, it was him. He had a funny comment after the race when he was getting interviewed right before the podium. I don't know if you caught it, but he was like, I thought about passing Max. I thought we had the pace to do it, but then I realized that I probably wouldn't be able to leave the circuit if I passed Max.
Yeah,
he would have gotten his ass kicked.
Oh, Alonso would have been. Yeah, he would have needed a police escort to get out of there. Yeah, I think Alonso could have done it. He also said, I don't think Max would have given me much space.
Which, no, I don't think so either.
Understatement of the year. But you know what Alonso also said is that, you know, it's going back to your point of, you know, praising Max for what he's doing. Even Alonso, you wouldn't expect him to praise another driver, but he said to be 100% all the time and rack up the wins is rare. And he said even I'm not 100% on certain races, and he's been able to do it this year. So he really praised them a lot. I don't know if he's trying to get that second Red Bull seat, because there is a bit of rumor Helmut said that he would be open to putting in another alpha driver, as in top-notch driver. And the rumors are more geared towards Lando. But just saying,
Fernando, don't do that, bro. Like, visions of 2007 are coming back to me right now.
Could you blame him? You know,
could I blame him? No, I couldn't blame him, but I think it would be a stupid career choice. But he's always had a tendency to like make a move to a team and then, you know, something happens. He and Max as a 1-2 would be worse than Senna Prost.
Man, if the Red Bull's still up there, it'd be entertaining as hell though.
Christian Horner doesn't want that smoke.
He'd rather not, I think. I'll tell you what, when Max got out of the pits, he pit a lap later than Perez. He had a 10-second deficit. And I just want to show you how he made up that gap in five laps. So on lap five, 0.6 faster while he was behind Gasly. Lap six, 1.9 seconds, including a pass on Gasly. Lap seven, 4.2 seconds quicker, including a pass on Joe. And then 1.3, 1.2, and then 9/10. Like, wow. It's insane. Just absolutely crushing it.
It's quite unbelievable to watch. It was crazy on that one restart how much Max got ahead of Checo. Checo like doesn't ever do very well on rolling restarts, but the way that he pulled away, that Max pulled away from Checo was ridiculous.
Yeah, I think he's got so much more confidence than Checo does in the same car.
Right.
You know, so which shows that when you do feel at one with a car, you can really make huge leaps forward.
Well, yeah. And I mean, Checo's race ultimately gave us what I think is one of the better feel good podiums of the season, which is Pierre's eventual P3, who, you know, Checo sped in the pit lane, gave him 5-second penalty.
He also crashed in the pit lane.
I mean, to finish P4 with the race that he had, you know, he obviously got unlucky with the strategy call from Red Bull to pull him into the pits. They didn't know that they were going to red flag the race. Dude, Pierre had a great weekend. And for a team that I think just needs to focus on the race, on a race weekend, it's a huge result. And he drove, for me, Pierre was arguably driver of the day.
I would also say, and this is my last point on Fernando, that just I need to bring up the pass he did on the inside of the bank, turn 3 on lap 1 on Albon and Russell.
That was sexy.
Holy shit. Like, wow. And like for me, he was driver of the day, but Gasly would probably be a close second. The team made the right calls for Gasly, and I think Gasly made the call to come in early. He gained, what, 8 or 9 positions? He was not really anywhere before the race, but once he was up there, he never went back. I think there was that amazing battle between him and Sainz in the wet, in the dry, kept passing each other, and it looked like the Alpine was faster than the Ferrari in most phases of the race. So very, very impressed by Gasly. And now it's a podium apiece for the drivers at Alpine. And I'll tell you what, Ocon was not happy after the race.
He was pissed. His post-race interview was... I haven't seen him that unhappy in a post-race interview in a while.
Obviously, there's wet tires in F1, but those are only used to go behind a safety car. When it gets to that point, unfortunately, drivers do crash out because some of them, if you're on inters, if it gets to wet weather tire conditions, and that's what happened really. But if the race had continued, Ocon would have been on a perfect strategy, but it didn't. We got the red flag, and Pierre, what I'm most impressed with is after the restart, him staying within 5 seconds of Checo.
Yeah, he didn't really drop that much time.
You think he only dropped like 2.5 seconds? And he said like, wow, it's not easy to stay within 5 seconds of Red Bull. A big, big understatement. And Pierre had his trouble. So he also got caught for speeding in the pit lane as well. So even through all the chaos, he managed to kind of make his way and podium apiece. And now he's also ahead of Ocon in the championship. So getting spicy there at Alpine.
I think Alpine, just what they need to take advantage of weekends like this, because I think there's still a lot of doubts as to whether they can perform on a weekend, but I feel like Pierre on weekends like this really puts himself in positions to pick up points where other teams drop them. Mm-hmm. He tends to be pretty good at that. Think about his first win.
Yeah, at the track that we're going to next. Yep. But yeah, it's amazing. And here's a stat for you. I didn't think I'd be saying this, but Alpine is now only the third team this year to have both their drivers on the podium after Red Bull, obviously, and Mercedes.
Really?
Yeah. So given all that's going on off track, that's, you know, results-wise, it's not too bad for Alpine.
That's a fun stat.
It's a fun stat, really, yeah. Fun stat.
You know who... Oh, man. You said that you were feeling numb about your boys in red, and... Carlos Sainz probably had one of the weirdest races I've seen a driver have in a while.
Like, yes.
I genuinely don't know how to describe the kind of race that he had.
First of all, he had no business scoring any points today. He was not put in the right conditions. He didn't make exactly the right calls, but he made better calls than some of the other teams that managed to fuck up even more than Ferrari for once. We got to note that. And, yeah, not much pace, but still gets a strong P5, I'd say, which moves him ahead of Leclerc, who had a DNF. But it was just one of those races where I thought, okay, maybe Ferrari could pick up the scraps, just like Gasly did, because on pace, that podium could have been Sainz. But in the end, unfortunately, he was on old, old intermediate tires. And that's also why, you know, Lewis was so close to him. I was baffled. I was, you know, disillusioned. Copy and paste the comments I've had on Ferrari from every race this year.
I mean, the image of Ferrari mechanics fumbling with tires this season has become laughable. I don't get it. How do you not, you know, it's going to rain. You see it. Someone's got to make the call to say, get the inters ready. If in fact we have to pit early.
Cause you know, Checo did the same thing, right? He came in, didn't give the team much warning.
Right.
And we saw Red Bull mechanics kind of struggling to find the tires, but it happened pretty quickly. Ferrari, he showed up at nothing. It's as if the mechanics were still sitting. That was a huge opportunity that, you know, also went by for Ferrari. But hey, I'm just chalking it to another, you know, it's not a failure. It's a lesson.
Oh my God. at what point do they become just failures? I don't know.
Ooh, well, Monza could be a rough awakening for Ferrari.
What can you say? Ferrari, just let's talk about a team who doesn't know how to maximize on other teams' strategy mistakes. It almost feels like Ferrari just compounds them.
Yeah, internally. Well, they weren't the only ones this weekend. No. Because I was kind of poking the bear last episode about Mercedes, and obviously we had different opinions. But I do think that Mercedes operationally is no longer what it used to be. I'm going to throw that out there.
Wow.
And this race weekend proved it completely for me. With Hamilton not making it into Q3, he was sent out in traffic. And in the race, they made every single mistake strategy-wise. In the first 12 laps, they made all of the wrong calls. They pit too late, and also they went back on the slicks too late. And they ended up being, they were P17 and P18 at one point.
The teams that pitted early seem to have benefited the most. Mm. And I was actually baffled by the call to have both drivers stay out in the rain. And then I think it was Bono got on the radio with Lewis and was like, we're just going to have to suck this one up.
Yeah, you have to brave it out.
Yeah, brave it out. And it's like, what, dude? Like, in what world? Like, get them into the fucking pits.
This is where I'm disappointed in Lewis Hamilton, 7-time world champion. Sometimes you need to make your own calls, just like the Ferrari drivers are doing it really well. Sainz and Leclerc will overrule. That's because they have no faith in their team. So that's the whole different conversation. But Lewis was the only driver to start the race on mediums because he started out of the top 10. He wanted to have a different strategy. But given the weather that was coming in and the information he had, he should have started on softs because he knew he would have to potentially have to deal with the rain. And when you're in the rain, the soft compound tires gives you the best grip and the least risk of sliding off. And you saw he made a good start, but as soon as the rain hit, he was getting passed by everyone on those mediums. So that was mistake number one. And then he didn't pit and he kept asking the teams, like, we should have pit. But Lewis, you should have made that call, I think. So I'm going to put that on Lewis. The team, of course, were wrong, but Lewis as well. Sometimes you can't just rely on the team. You're the one out there feeling the conditions.
Yeah, he should have made that call the moment it started raining.
That's pretty bad, yeah. And I will say, though, that after that, he drove really well, brought it back to P6. Could have gotten signs, but I think that Merck had no straight line speed. He was down by almost 10 kph on the straight on signs, and that's the only thing that saved signs. But also, he almost lost out P6 to Lando on the line.
Yeah, which why, like, somehow, like how we missed that on the broadcast, I still don't get. Like, oh, I understand. I understand that we're like celebrating Max, but it's like, oh, and mind you, Lando is going to finish like almost like a hundredth off of Lewis for that position.
0.023. So 0.023 of a second. So it must have been like side by side. I still haven't seen it, but I'm going to pull up a clip because he must have missed an exit or he must have Lewis must have gone for a move on Sainz that didn't go well, put him out of sorts, and Lando pulled up. But yeah, Lewis, I would say he almost had like a decent recovery drive, even though P6 is not that great. But compared to his teammate, who had a good qualifying, his teammate finished, well, officially he finished P18, but after the restart, had a bit of contact with Norris, and obviously had a damaged car, so kind of tumbled. I thought he DNF'd, but he actually did finish the race. But you asked a question about Russell.
Should we be worried about George? There seems to be a lack of confidence in him. I mean, there was one moment in the race where he was ahead of Lewis. The onboard from Lewis's car is crazy, but George probably had what looks like the save of the season so far, because
yes, absolutely.
In a moment, and I'm going to quote Will Buxton here.
Yes,
he tested the structural integrity of his underpants. dude, he somehow it was his mistake that caused this, but he hit the grass. The car wiggles out from the back end. He somehow saves it, but had he not saved it, he might have gone straight into that sidewall. He was almost perpendicular to the wall at one point. Yeah.
So Lewis was right behind him closing up, and he was saying, "Hey, we're on a different strategy. Let me through." And George, I don't know what George was doing. Was he looking in his mirrors? Was he surprised by how quickly Lewis was pulling up on him, because he was going to pass him in a T1? He hit the grass, slid, corrected, hit the grass again, and Lewis had to lift, and they were going 250 kilometers an hour there. So yeah, if he crashed that car, oof, that would have been
bad.
A huge crash. So great save. Should we be worried though? I don't know, because George made it to Q3. He delivered this weekend, and I think that let's let it play out. I think George is going through a bit of a rough patch. What I didn't like about George was his comment at the beginning of the race where he said, "Oh, I was predicting a podium. How did I end up here?" Well, man, things don't always go your way. You know, it's a weird thing to say on the radio on lap three when you see like in a chaotic race. You just got to deal with it and put your head down. Because yeah, you're not owed anything, George. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't understand that comment from him either, where he thought like he was guaranteed a podium via strategy. But it's like, I don't know what these teams are talking about with their drivers if they're making comments like that before a race where there's rain expected. It's like there's never any guarantee in F1, and especially when it fucking rains. Like, let's be real. Yeah. So,
but I don't think we should be worried about George. There are a few signs of he's a bit irritating at times, and I think it comes out of his frustration because the year isn't going as well as he wanted it to go, and he has gotten the wrong end of a lot of safety cars this year, where as opposed to last year where he got everything went his way last year.
True, that is fair. I mean, we'll see what the rest of the season brings. I think George he's a driver that I would say just needs to put his head down and have just solid points weekend. Maybe even get a finish over Lewis, or just outperform Lewis on a weekend. But speaking of Lewis, we talked about that over the line battle with him and Lando. We were all looking to see what McLaren would do this past weekend, and I feel like they had a pretty quiet one. We didn't like there wasn't a lot of chatter from that end of the paddock.
Well, P2 on the grid, Lando was, I thought if they made the right call, it would have been a different race, because McLaren and Mercedes had really good race pace. I don't know if they would have been ahead of Alonso, but they would have been right up there fighting for P3, Lewis and Norris. And they had a race-long battle that was really entertaining. I feel like we didn't catch enough of it on the live coverage, but yeah, I think they got caught out and they had to kind of do recovery drive similar to Merck.
Did Lewis compliment Lando's driving again?
Great driver. I didn't hear that. No.
Not this race.
I'll tell you, if Lando had gotten him on the line, he would not have said that.
Oh, he would have been pissed. Yeah. He's like, guys, what are we doing? You know, that would have been the radio.
Yeah, because just a quick note on the grid, Verstappen obviously got pulled, but Norris was close and was faster in sector one, and he said he had the worst end of the lap ever. which means that he was on provisional pole after the first runs, and he might have thought he had a shot at it. And then Russell's in P3 and Albon was in P4, just to show you how crazy qualifying was.
Nuts.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, not a lot from my end on McLaren, but you did just mention another driver who I thought, who I think is just having probably his best overall season in F1 is Alex Albon. And he said this past weekend at Zandvoort is the best he's ever felt in a Williams.
He was surprised to qualify that high, and he was actually disappointed with P8, which says a lot about how far Williams has come in the last 18 months. He thinks he could have gotten P6.
Yeah.
If things had gone his way. And I don't disagree with him. That car was doing well. He was one of the drivers that did not pit for Inters in the beginning. He had to brave it out on slicks. It was not easy. He did not make a single mistake. Albon, a lot of people, you know, it's the silly season rumor mill again, but a lot of people are saying throw Albon back in the Red Bull and see what he can do against Max.
Oh boy.
I say don't do it. Don't do it, Alex. Yeah.
Alex, don't do it, whatever you do. I think it's interesting because we're talking about the strategy calls that Mercedes made, you know, and I think
terrible calls.
Right. But think about who they lost in James Vowles, who's now team principal at Williams.
Ooh, yes. Thank you for bringing that up.
I think what we're seeing is ultimately a net benefit on the side of Williams, having someone like James Vowles in, you know, the driver's seat, not, no pun intended, where he's helping this team along, and they've got a driver in Alex, and he even said it, Vowles did in the post race. He's like, Alex is really, we're seeing a maturity in him where he's giving feedback to the team and that the team is responding well. And that's, we're starting to see that on race day.
Alex Albon is the real deal. And he showed it this year. I've said it on the last few podcasts. This is nothing new here on the grandstand. You've heard it here before.
Albon, you heard it here, folks. Brum, brum, brum.
Pew, pew, pew. Albon will cause a lot of headaches with top teams. And I don't think Red Bull, because I think Red Bull has enough on their plate, as we'll get to soon. But I think that Ferrari is coming up with some contract renewals. I'm thinking Mercedes still doesn't know what's going on. I think we know that Lewis will sign for 2 years, but what's going to happen after that? I think McLaren, things could shift there. Audi's coming into the picture. And if I'm a team principal today and I look at the top drivers, obviously Max ain't going anywhere. Lewis ain't going anywhere. Leclerc and Albon could be, they're the key to the driver market for 2025, 26 and onwards.
Wow. All right. Yeah. Make note of it. You heard it here, y'all. P Money's hot take. but another, on the other side of the Williams garage is the compatriot Logan Sargeant, who looked good through practice and even in qualifying, honestly.
Hey, he looked really good, and he was not too far from Albon, which we just praised, obviously. Sargeant made into Q3, and he became the first American to qualify in the top 10 since 1993. And that showed progress. Unfortunately,
was that Michael Andretti?
I think so. Yes, yeah. I'm sorry. The stats were
That's when Andretti had like a 6 month stint at McLaren.
McLaren, yeah. And then he got fired. So he made it into Q3, but then he also hit a wet patch and crashed it, causing a red flag. So it went from being his best qualifying to also a terrible moment because he cost the team a lot of money, and it just adds to those little mistake. So
he's aware of it, dude. He brought it up. He's like, I can't. He said it in his post race. He I think it was Lawrence Barreto was interviewing him, and he's like, so did you just need to sit in that lawn chair to like reflect for a little bit? And he's like, no, I couldn't get back to the to the paddock. So I just had to stick it out. And, you know, I definitely had some thinking to do. So
in his defense, though, the crash during the race, which looked bad for him as a driver. It was later confirmed by Williams that it was a hydraulic failure when he hit the curb at turn 8. And he lost power steering. Still not a good look, I'd say.
But here's the problem. James Vowles, going back to James Vowles, gave an interview post-race and said that he kept hitting that curb in the same way all weekend, and it was causing issues to the front right. And so it could be that by hitting the curb the way that he was caused a hydraulic issue, which ultimately sent him out of the race. That could be. I'm not a mechanic or an engineer, but I feel like James Vowles may have been suggesting.
So yeah, Vowles says it's not the first time he throws out little hints in the press. And I'll tell you what, Toto and Mick are in the background trying to put a move on for sure, 100%. But I will say that we still have 9 races to go. De Vries had the most pressure in the first half of the season. And now Logan Sargeant cannot hide. He's got to score points quickly.
I agree.
Speaking of which, we've already had a driver replacement this year. And we were also very excited to see Danny Rick come back. He's raced 2 races already, summer break. And unfortunately, the unthinkable happened.
Dude.
I mean, okay. I'm not gonna be that dramatic.
Yeah, all right. That's that unthinkable is something.
Yeah, dude.
Daniel, well, in case you missed it, Daniel Ricciardo is still alive and he just
Yeah. I apologize. It was a bummer. I'll put it this way. FP1 or is it FP2? Oscar Piastri puts it in the wall. Danny Rick doesn't see him coming up, and he said he had 2 choices, either hit Oscar or hit the wall. He didn't have time to remove his hand off the steering wheel, which is a reflex that, you know, drivers do when they hit the wall, and he broke his hand. Metacarpal bone.
Yeah, it goes to show that it's important to take your hands off that steering wheel. Yeah, dude, what a shocker. What an absolute shocker. You feel gutted for the guy because it's like genuinely didn't look like a mistake. It wasn't his mistake, you know, trying to protect another driver. It sucks.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
Yeah, it really is. If we can take one example from earlier in the season with Lance Stroll, you know, I'm sure he's talking to Lance's boys and being like, I need you. He calls Lance up after the race. He's like, I need your boy. I need your guy.
and they got the best hand surgeon who takes care of a lot of MotoGP drivers, because those guys break their hands a lot. So he's taken care of by some of the top experts. Michael Italiano said in the press that it was probably the least worst place to break his hand because under the pinky, which is the finger you use the least in driving. Rumors still are that he can come back in 6 weeks, and there's Singapore coming up, which is the hardest on drivers, and I feel that he won't be back before after that. So apparently Qatar or maybe after. This means we have another driver change at AlphaTauri, and we have Liam Lawson coming in, Kiwi, 21-year-old. And now we're going to see what he's made out of, and this could turn into a battle between him and Danny Rick for next year.
I'm going to err on the side of it's not a battle between him and Danny Rick. You have a proven race winner in Danny Rick. There's just so much more experience there to help develop the car. Danny Rick has made his intentions clear. Like, he came out in Sky Sports this week and said, like, he wants to finish his career with Red Bull now that he's back in the family again.
Oh yeah, that's huge.
Even if it means he doesn't get a seat, you know, back at Red Bull, and he stays with the junior team, which says a lot about where he's at in his career. I don't want to take anything away from Liam Lawson, because I do want to say, like, to come in and basically get your first laps in F1 with no practice or very little practice on a circuit you've never driven the car on, to bring it home above his teammate. I got to give the kid some credit. It was pretty incredible.
Yeah. Not only that, his first laps were FP3 completely wet. His first laps in that car were in a wet session. He obviously didn't make it out of Q3, qualified last, but you can't really read into that. His first dry laps ever in that car were the reconnaissance laps to the grid. And then 3 minutes later, the race hadn't even started that it started raining again. So not great conditions for a rookie to make their debut. So I think he's looking at that Monza weather and he's smiling that it's going to be relatively sunny and dry conditions, because that's when you can really get to know the car and a track. And also, hey, as history will remind us, that's where Nyck de Vries last year got his seat in the first place by proving himself. So
that's right, dude.
But to get back to the Danny Rick versus Lawson battle, I agree that if you're comparing both, obviously Danny Rick is the choice. But this, unfortunately for Danny Rick, throws Lawson's name in the hat now. He's going to have to be considered. And if he does well, maybe Yuki's going to have to watch out.
I mean, that's what I would. I think it's more likely that Yuki needs to watch out than DR3.
Well, we have a new F1 driver, and that's pretty exciting. It's not very close at the top, but there's a lot of things happening throughout the grid. And Red Bull, once again, the Red Bull family is giving us some other storylines. So thank you.
Always have to keep it interesting. It's like a revolving door of drivers and drama. And
who'd have thought, man?
It's wild. What I don't know how, you know, it's interesting that they've been able to maintain such a level of success given, you know, obviously the you know, they've just kind of been a machine, but everything that's been happening at the junior team at AlphaTauri, it's just been interesting to me that Red Bull's been able to keep such a level head through all this. Just saying.
Yeah. But, well, I just hope Lawson doesn't feel Helmut's wrath next weekend. I hope, you know, he gets to enjoy this.
If Helmut gives this guy shit, Helmut, don't get me started on Helmut Marko again.
We'll save it. We'll save it for another
Yeah, please.
Let's talk about Italy. We're going to Monza, man.
Yeah, I was at the race last year. Let's hope for all of the fans going this year, it's not an absolute shit show like it was last year. What I'm going to do this weekend is I'm not going to drink anything the entire day. I'm going to eat a sandwich that's drier than sand. And I'm not going to be able to watch any of the race. So that's my plan for the Italian Grand Prix.
Okay, so this was your 2022 experience.
Yeah. I'm going to make sure that I can't get cash anywhere or pay for any of my groceries. Yeah, I'll try to get tokens from Chuck E. Cheese and then pay for those tokens and be told that I can't pay for anything with those tokens. I don't know. Whatever.
Italia.
Yeah. But Italian Grand Prix, there's a lot of fanfare around Ferrari, obviously, home race. It was just announced that Ferrari's going to have a livery paying tribute to their Le Mans victory.
Yes, the 499 victory earlier this year.
Yep.
Yellow and red. I like it on the car. I think you have thoughts on the race suit. Maybe it looks like a very famous fast food chain.
If you replace Ferrari with McDonald's, you'd have a great work uniform for a McDonald's employee.
I think it looks a little less like the McDonald's uniform than last year's livery they did. But yeah, true. I agree. I'll tell you what. You know what it reminds me of, this race suit?
What's that?
A champ car overall. From back in the day.
Yeah. I saw one comedian bit, and he was like, this is giving me Penske 1992 vibes.
Oh yeah, there you go. Yeah. I'm not expecting much from Ferrari, but who knows? You never know. Yeah. We just had a chaotic race and things can happen.
I think we see, this is my take, and I've got to go first in our predictions. I only got 4 points on you last week. It's 227 points for me to your 209.
Yeah, we both got Max pole and victory, and you got Checo P4.
Yep. So covered you a little bit, but it's my turn to go first this week. It's hard to not put Max on pole, so I'm going to go Max pole. Max win. I'm going to go with Charles on P2. Wow. I'm gonna give Ferrari a little bit of love this week. I'm gonna go Fernando P3, Lewis P4, Checo P5.
And what about the Gromo?
Just because he's new, I'm gonna go Liam Lawson.
I mean, yeah, a rookie is always.
we never get Gromos anyway. No. But.
Well, and even last race, if someone had called Perez, because when he hit that wall, it could have been argued, but still, yeah, we're pretty bad at those. okay, getting some love from Ferrari. Okay, I need to make some points up on you, but you can't go against Max. Also, he could break the record and hold the record on his own for most consecutive wins if he won in Monza. I think Red Bull gets a 1-2.
Ooh, okay.
This race. I think Checo shows up. They score 1-2. I think Lewis gets a P3. Leclerc will score P4, which is pretty good. And here's my kind of wild card of the weekend. Albon, P5.
Whoa. Okay.
I think Williams got something up their sleeve for Monza. They have a very fast car.
They have been talking a lot about this race.
I've heard people call Albon on pole. I'm not going to drink that Kool-Aid, but I think if a few DNFs in front of him, he could pick up some big points. So fingers crossed for that. And the Gromo, I'm going to go for Stroll because he deserves a little bit of chatter here. Where the fuck was he? Once again, call it the usual, but yeah. What the hell, man?
I like how aggressively you said that. Where the fuck were you, Lance? Where the fuck were you?
I mean, come on. You've been given an F1 team for Christmas. Do something with it.
You've been given an F1 team for Christmas, you silver spoon fuck.
Yeah. Those are my predictions for Monza.
tell you really feel about the Stroll family. I'm excited for this one. I do love Monza as a track. I think they need to make sure the fan experience is better than what most of us experienced there last year. But I'm looking forward to it. Now, if you're not following us already on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, give us a follow at The Grandstand. And give us a follow on Instagram at The Grandstand F1. And yeah, P-Money, you excited about this one?
Yeah, going back to Italy, obviously. As I said, I have no expectations, but as soon as that FP1 starts, I'm going to expect to win again for Ferrari. So I will get my heart broken again this week, but hey, I'm used to it. Bring it on.
Yeah. What did I say earlier? We should cue Linkin Park's Numb. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
All right, man. Well, until next week. For P Money, I'm F Knowles. We'll see you on the next one.
Forza Ferrari.
Shut up.